This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the show where each time we take a trip back in time and listen to stories from our veterans, normally World War II veterans, but we're going to throw you a curveball today, and I think it's fitting as everyone focuses in on the Winter Olympics in Sochi, Russia, that we will be joined today by a three-time Olympic medalist. Two of those medals are gold medals. He's also a veteran of the U.S. Army, 26 years in the service, retired as a lieutenant colonel, and continues to serve our country by training Olympians of today and tomorrow. Lonis Wigger of Colorado Springs, Colorado, our guest today, but originally from Carter, Montana. How big is Carter, Montana?
Oh, that's a big place. We don't even have a service station. And we have a bar part of the time. I suppose a couple hundred people.
So growing up there, what was life like growing up in the 1940s and 50s in Carter, Montana?
Well, I don't remember too much about the 40s, but the 50s, I grew up on a farm. My dad was a wheat farmer, lived about 12 miles out in the country from Carter, and I attended grade school in Carter most of the time. I grew up as a target shooter, and I knew that shooting was a sport in the Olympic Games, and I had something like a long-range goal way out that hopefully someday I could be on the U.S. Olympic team. You didn't get much by the way of news. The TV wasn't really prevalent at that time, so you really didn't hear a whole lot. And, of course, you never heard anything about what happened with the shooters, so I really didn't know anything until I got in the Army.
Now, your first military experience would have been at Montana State?
Right. I enrolled and took ROTC. Of course, at that time, everybody, all the males, had to take 2 years of ROTC, so it was mandatory. It wasn't a matter of you wanting to. But I took the first 2 years, and then I decided that I wanted to go ahead and get my commission and go on active duty, because by that time, I had heard a lot about and knew a lot about the U.S. Army's marksmanship training unit at Fort Benning, Georgia, and knew they were training soldiers to be shooters, international shooters, which meant world championships, Olympics, and so on, if they were good enough. So by that time, I had pretty much set my goal that I wanted to be a part of the marksmanship unit at Fort Benning, because it was the only really real opportunity that anybody had at that point in my sport to train. Yeah, that was my goal, was to get that commission and go on active duty and get to Fort Benning.
And what was it about shooting that really drew you in? Because a lot of kids, I'm sure, growing up in Montana like to hunt and fish, or maybe they like to play some football. But what was it about shooting that really made you gravitate toward it?
Well, I've always liked athletics. I was really a big baseball fan back in the 50s, and I St. Louis Cardinal, and I had all the players and their averages, and I knew everything about all of them. And
Stan the Man, your favorite?
Oh, yeah. And so really it was baseball, but in high school didn't have a baseball program. All they had was football and basketball. And I would have loved to have played one of the two, but I wasn't hardly big enough. 5'4 and 150 pounds, that's not much of a football player, and not quite tall enough to be a basketball player. So shooting was my outlet, the opportunity that I had to excel in something athletically. My father was a target shooter, and we had a rifle club there in Carter, Montana. We shot in the basement of the community hall, and they had been shooting since the 1930s with their club. And so it was kind of natural for me to gravitate into the program, and I started when I was about 10 or 11 years old. No junior program at that point, but just trained with the seniors, and I shot in the local league matches with the seniors and some of the tournaments and so on. That's really how I learned.
You mentioned your father being a shooter. I guess he would have been one of your role models. Was there anybody else in the shooting world that you looked up to or said, yeah, I want to be like that person?
No, I don't really think so. At that point, I didn't know of any shooters in the United States that, you know, had really won medals and so on, so I really had none to look up to. I had met several of the shooters. When I went to Montana State, I also shot in their rifle team, ROTC team, and the varsity team. And we went to some of the matches around in the West to shoot. And it's 1 year we went to El Paso, Texas to shoot this big collegiate competition. The Army Marksmanship Unit sent a crew out to the competition to put on a clinic, because they're recruiting too. And so that's where I got to meet some of the famous Army shooters at that point. It was about five or six of them there, and we got to visit with them and talk with them and so on. And if I didn't know before, I knew after that that was my goal, to get on that team. do what I could to get there. So that was what I started, you know, really working for from that point on.
And how long was it till you accomplished that goal?
Well, I think that was about 1958 when I went to that clinic, but graduated in June of 1960. Got my commission in infantry branch, and then waited to go on active duty in February 61. At that point, I was married and already had a child, and so we loaded the car and went to Georgia. So I went over and signed in, and the day I signed in, the captain in charge of the team took me in to meet the colonel, the commander of the unit, marksmanship unit, and this was like in end of March, first part of April, something like that. And that's the time of year in the winter when we always shot our indoor sectional championships, and that's where you shoot different places in the country, and they compile your scores to pick your indoor champions. And I always shot that competition. Well, I didn't get to shoot that year because of the school. And I asked the captain who was in charge, I said, is there any? They were leaving to go to Morgantown, West Virginia to shoot the sectional that weekend. I said, is there any way that I could go on that trip? I really would like to shoot that sectional. He said, well, I don't know. He says, let's talk to the colonel. So I went in and met the colonel and everything. And he says, Lieutenant Wigger here wants to go to Morgantown and shoot with the team this weekend, shoot the indoor sectional. He said he's willing to pay his own way and take leave if need to go shoot. And the colonel kind of looked at me and he says, well, we don't take leave to go shoot around here. He says, we pay the way. So he asked the captain, he says, how'll he do? Will he be the low shooter? And Captain Atwood, he says, no, I don't think so. He says, all right, put him on orders. So I got to go. And I wasn't the low shooter. I was about the middle of the pack. But that was my beginning in the marksmanship unit.
I've got to ask you, because for people that listen to this show, and for me doing the show, most of the guys I talk to, as I said, are World War II guys, so they knew, for the most part, some of them were in before the war, even then they had an inkling something was happening, and for those drafted during the war, they knew what they were getting into. For you, you were just a kid when World War II happened, you're just turning into a teenager when the Korean War was going on. So here in the early 1960s, as you're in the Army and in this marksmanship unit, did you have any inkling that you might be headed overseas to fight a war as you eventually would?
No, that never crossed my mind. Really, at that time, we weren't heavily involved in Vietnam yet. And we had some advisors over there and working with them and so on, but it didn't really blow up for a couple more years. So then obviously we knew that things were going to happen. I had a 2-year commitment as a reserve officer, and when my 2 years was up, I decided to get out because I wasn't shooting that good. I figured that they were going to send me somewhere, and I really didn't have any thought of making the Army a career. I wanted to shoot. You know, the way things looked, I didn't think there was any chance that I was going to get any better at it. So, although I did make the Pan American game team in the spring of 63, they had been prone somehow. I lucked out and made the team and went to Brazil and won the silver medal. And I figured that's probably the only international competition I'll ever get to go to, and probably the only medal I'd ever win. So I figured, oh, now's probably a good time to get out. So the spring of 63, we had a European training trip. Not a lot of competitions, but we'd go to Europe and we'd shoot against different countries and so on. We'd end up going to the factory where the firearms were built, because most of our shooters wanted to use European firearms. We used Remingtons at the time I tried out, and they just weren't good enough. And when I went to Europe that spring, I went to the Walther factory and bought a Walther free rifle. When I got out of the Army, went back to Montana, figured I'd probably end up going back to school in Bozeman to get my master's degree and go on and get a job in my major, which was agronomy. But that summer, I traveled quite a bit and shot matches. I went to Canada and shot a match and won that. Then I ended up going to Camp Perry, Ohio, which is the home of our National Rifle Association championships. Not international shooting, but NRA shooting. I won the three position championship there that year with my new rifle. And I borrowed a rifle from an old shooter from Idaho, and I won the prone championship with his gun. So I won both of them that year, first time anyone had won both in the same year. So when I got back from Camp Perry in August, I thought, you know, I'm starting to shoot a little bit better. Well, I got a letter from the Army, and it said that if you want to come back on active duty, you'll notify us within 6 months when you got out. And I said, I qualify, I've only been out 5 months. I said, if I come back in, where do you send me? He said, where do you want to go? Well, obviously, I said, I want to go to the marksmanship unit in Fort Benning. And I said, okay. I said, all right, I'm back in. And I started training again. And the unit got in 3 new Anschutz rifles from Germany, rimfire small bore rifles. So I drew one out and started shooting it. It seemed like every time I shot it, I shot better. It was like I had the wrong gun all along. I had the right one now. And I shot very good all winter long. And we went to Europe in the spring for matches. And I went to the Anschutz factory and bought a new rifle there. Well, we shot the Olympic trials. I used the unit Anschutz, not my new one yet. I didn't take it out of the case yet. But anyway, I used the unit one, shot the small bore trials. I ended up tied for second place. And they take two people. So they weren't sure how they were going to break the tie. They didn't know what they were going to do. So finally they decided we're going to come back tomorrow and we're going to shoot a half course. And normally the course of fire is 40 prone, 40 standing, 40 kneeling. So we decided to shoot a half course, 20, 20, 20. I had a big party in my house that night because it was supposed to be the end of the trials and all the shooters come over there and have a party. Well, I had to have the party, but I was very careful. That's what I did. The fellow that I was tied with, he didn't bother to come. He stayed home. So the next day we went out, and I think everybody that was there shooting and had been at my house all came to the range to watch. We had a crowd of, I would guess, around 40 or 50 people watching us shoot that half course. I won the half course by 7 or 8 points, and I made the Olympic team. Jim Hill, Marine Corps, had won a silver medal in the Olympics in 1960 in Rome with a non-shoots prone rifle, and he loaned me his rifle to take with me, and I shot his rifle prone over there. I shot the 597 prone, which was 2 points over the world record, and tied with the Hungarian. And he Creedmoored me. He beat me in the last stand. He had 100, and I had a 99. So he got the gold, and I got the silver. We both got world records. So that was with the borrowed gun. And then in the three position match, I used his gun prone and my gun for standing and kneeling, and won the gold medal and set the world record, and won the match by 12 points. It just seemed like everything that year clicked. Like I said, every time I shot, I seemed to get better. And then it took me a couple of years after that to get let down and come back and shoot where I should. When you win something big like that, you know, you've accomplished your goal. At that point, you don't have goals, and you're kind of floating, and you really don't know, what do I do now? You either quit, or you reestablish goals, and you go again. But it usually takes a while, and it took me 2 or 3 years to actually get over that and start get back in the game competitive. In 1966, we went to Wiesbaden, Germany, and shot the World Championships. And when I got back, I had orders for Vietnam.
Let me ask you a little bit, because I'm sure people at home, especially now that they're watching the Olympics on TV, the Winter Olympics, they're curious about that Olympic experience. It's 50 years ago now, in 1964, and I know there are some pretty good basketball players on that Olympic team, some pretty good boxers, track stars. What was it like for you to have that gold medal placed around your neck? This kid from Carter, Montana, here you are in Tokyo. You were a boy when Tokyo was getting bombed by Doolittle's Raiders, and here you are standing on the podium getting the gold medal. What was that moment like for you?
Well, it was unreal. I mean, the whole trip the year before getting there and being someone who had really very little experience and unknown. Nobody knew me at all. Normally, to go in and do something like that, you've had to have years of experience behind you and accomplishment, so on. Somehow it all came together for me. I wish I knew why, but yeah, it was unbelievable getting the medals. And my dad was there. He attended the games with me, so we did things together at night and so on. And so, you know, it was just a real proud moment for him to be there and for me to win. Like I say, I really don't know why. I don't know why it all came together for me when it did. It was just lucky.
What about other Olympians? Did you rub shoulders with any of those famous names on that 64 Olympic team? Do you have some memories of walking through stadiums or seeing people here and there?
I met a few, but not really. You were in the village. You lived in the village, but you know, most of the famous ones lived in hotels. They didn't stay in the village with the rest of us. But I did get to see some of the other events. I went to the track event, and I saw Bob Hayes run the last leg of the 400. When he took the baton, he was behind, and he blew the guy out and won. They say it was the fastest leg ever run. So I got to see that. And I don't know if you remember Billy Mills or not. He was no favorite either. He wasn't supposed to do anything. The Australian, I think it was, or New Zealand, I'm not sure which, was the favorite, and he was supposed to win. And I talked to Billy Mills after that. As a matter of fact, we were on a TV show in New York that next winter. I've Got a Secret. And he and I were there, two lieutenants that were on a rowing. Each of us were a lieutenant in the different military. So we had the Navy and the Air Force and the rowers. Billy was the Marine, I was the Army. All lieutenants, and all had won gold medals. And they had to guess our secret. Well, they obviously didn't guess it. But I got to talk to him some there, too. And his story was kind of like mine in a way. He says, I don't know why I won. He said, I went into that last turn. And he said, I was this far behind, and, you know, there wasn't really any way I was going to catch. And he says, all of a sudden, he says, it's just like it was ordained. I got the second wind, and I just took off and won the gold medal. I think he's kind of like me. He probably still doesn't know to this day why. But it was pretty interesting talking to him.
Here they come down the final lap. Can Ron Clark catch the Mooney? They're going through the field. He's coming up. He's passing the Mooney.
Look at Bills! Look at Mills!
Coming on! Mills is coming on!
Oh!
It might be Bill Mills. What a tremendous surprise here! Bill Mills in the United States wins the 10,000 meters!
Bud Palmer and Dick Bank on NBC back in 1964 describing Billy Mills' improbable gold medal. Our guest today, Lonis Wigger, has described his own unlikely path to the top of the podium in Tokyo 50 years ago. But when we come back, we'll explore his Army experiences during the Vietnam War. This Olympic-themed edition of Hometown Heroes will come right back after this. You know, one of the things I appreciate so much about the veterans we meet on Hometown Heroes is that they're real. A sincere and genuine spirit really makes an impression on me, and that's why I'm such a big fan of Educational Employees Credit Union. It was EECU that spearheaded the launch of Central Valley Honor Flight with an initial donation of close to $25,000, and the giving did not end there. More than 200,000 members know EECU represents smarter banking, but it's not just about being smart, it's about the heart. I've worked with the folks at EECU for years, and I've watched them put their money where their mouth is, supporting their credit union members right where they live in hometowns up and down Central California. From sponsoring first-class Educator of the Year ceremonies to taking the lead in sending World War II veterans on an unforgettable journey, my friends at EECU keep proving that you are at the heart of everything they do. Go to myeecu.org to see what EECU can do for you, or just walk into any branch. And while you're there, if you enjoy this show, tell them thanks for supporting Hometown Heroes.